Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Well, it's another yellow air day in Salt Lake, Davis, Weber, and Utah counties. And according to the EPA website, this is the 10th day in a row for a yellow warning in our area. What does prolonged exposure of this kind of dirty air mean for our health? Today on the program, we're talking about the health consequences of air pollution and what the latest research shows. Joining me this hour, Dr. Brian Minch. He is an anesthesiologist in private practice in Salt Lake City. He's also founder and president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, and he joins me in studio. And Dr. Minch, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Later on in the program, Driving Unplugged, the dangers of distracted driving. But first, air quality. How is pollution affecting your health or your driving habits? 801-355-TALK is the number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. And before we begin, I should mention that Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment is hosting a public seminar on the latest medical research about chronic diseases caused by air pollution today at about 2:45 here in the City Library in the fourth floor conference room. At 2 o'clock, Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment and Utah Moms for Clean Air will be announcing a lawsuit against Rio Tinto, Kennecott, Utah Copper for alleged violations of the Clean Air Act. And we'll have more information on our website, kcpw.org. Dr. Minch, you are an anesthesiologist by trade. You founded Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment in 2007. Why did you feel like you needed to speak out on the air quality issue here in Utah?
In the winter of 2007, we had, if you recall, about a four-week prolonged temperature inversion, and the pollution really started to mount, probably twice as bad as we've had it in the last 10 days. And as weeks passed, there didn't seem to be any response on the part of the political leaders, either at the city level or at the county level, and certainly not at the state level. And so after about a month, I really became personally alarmed, and some of my colleagues did as well. And at that time, we weren't really all that knowledgeable ourselves about what air pollution was doing to people, but we knew that it was certainly not good. But we decided that we'd better learn exactly how severe a health impact it really was. So about 10 of my colleagues and I did an intense literature search for about 6 weeks. And what we discovered is that what we thought was really a serious health problem was even much worse than we had assumed before we started. And we were so alarmed by what we had discovered that we decided we'd better talk to the governor about it, who was John Huntsman at the time, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And he agreed to meet with us, and so we gave him a personal presentation that went three times as long as he had allotted the time, because he was as alarmed as we were by what we were telling him. And so then we held a press conference a few days later, and ever since then we've been doing this, and as far as me personally goes, with probably every minute of my spare time.
Hmm. How do we define air pollution? I'm assuming it's not you know it when you see it definition. It's
no,
not
it's
just
not that
gray
simple.
Skies outside. What exactly are we talking about?
No, it's not that simple. There are two primary components of garden variety air pollution, if you will. The one that is probably the most serious is particulate matter. And the portion of particulate matter that is getting the most attention from regulators is what's called PM2.5. That stands for particulate matter, and the 2.5 stands for the size of the particles, which is 2.5 microns.
So these are tiny little bits.
These are very tiny particles. You really can't see them. You have to actually have an electron microscope, really, to see them very well. The other component of air pollution that is almost ubiquitous is ozone. During the wintertime, the main component of concern is particulate matter, and there isn't necessarily an exact correlation between what looks bad and what is actually bad for your health. That's one of the reasons why we monitor these things, and our state agency does that. But having said that, there frequently is a correlation between how bad it looks and how severe an impact it's having on your health.
We are going to talk about these tiny particulates throughout the hour and the problems that they are causing. But before we run through some of these health issues, I do want to note that your group, Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, and the group Utah Moms for Clean Air, you're both filing a joint lawsuit today against Rio Tinto Kennecott Utah Copper. First of all, before we get to the reasons behind that, the specific reasons, just why generally target Rio Tinto?
If you look at the data that is inventoried at the Utah Division of Air Quality, and this is data that is submitted by industrial sources to the Utah DAQ. This is basically voluntary data that they submit. It's basically self-reporting. It's an honor system, if you will. According to that data submitted, Rio Tinto is responsible for about a third of the particulate matter in Salt Lake County. They're by far the biggest industrial source of pollution, about 10 times more than the next biggest industrial source, which is the Chevron oil refinery. So if you were to look at all the many things that contribute to our air pollution problem and target the one thing that really stands out, one individual source, it would be Rio Tinto Kennecott. Now, as a group, our automobiles and other sources of fossil fuel combustion that we all benefit from, gas furnaces that heat our homes and so forth, they certainly, as a group, contribute the balance or the primary difference between industrial sources and what we see and breathe every day. So that certainly is a big part of the equation. But when the largest industrial source comes to the state and say, we want to become an even bigger source of pollution, and our pollution problem is as severe as it is, and everyone recognizes it, then our group said, wait a minute, somebody's got to apply some rationality to this. And so we worked with Rio Tinto behind the scenes, trying to negotiate with their executives for about 6 months a program for them to curtail their pollution, because they were in the midst of applying to expand. So we tried to negotiate in session after session some pollution concessions, if you will. We simply were unable to do that. They weren't willing to do it. We hit a brick wall. They then went to the state and got a permit to expand, which we contested. And that permit, by the way, was only granted by one single vote. It was granted by a 5-4 vote. And it's also of note that opposition groups like ours were not allowed to speak or testify at the Air Quality Board hearing where that vote was taken. So even despite all that, despite the disadvantages that we faced, despite the inability to present the kind of data that we wanted to, it still only passed by a single vote. So having received that permit, Rio Tinto then has, in their minds, the legal authority to expand. We, however, look at the law completely differently, and our contention, as is the contention of the other groups that have joined us, is that it's still illegal, that it violates the Clean Air Act. And the details of that we're going to talk about this afternoon.
Now, I did invite Rio Tinto to join us today. They respectfully declined since they haven't seen the lawsuit yet. Mm-hmm. But they did agree to come on the program at a later time, so they will have a chance to respond to some of these allegations. But you say they did get the stamp of approval from a regulatory agency. It may have been just one vote, but they did get it. So aren't they meeting the requirements of the Clean Air Act?
No, they're not, actually, because the Clean Air Act requires that the EPA sign off onto what's called the State Implementation Plan, which is a state strategy to meet the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. The last time that the EPA signed off onto the state's implementation plan, which periodically is updated, but the last time the EPA approved that was 1994. So two permits since then, one about 9 years ago and another this summer, Rio Tinto has seen that as an opportunity to expand, but the EPA has never approved that. And the Clean Air Act requires that the EPA approve that state implementation plan, and they have not. And they have given notice to the state that they will not. And in fact, the state withdrew the implementation plan because the EPA would not sign off onto it.
We're speaking with Dr. Brian Mench. He is an anesthesiologist, also founder and president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. And we're talking about air quality here in Utah. If you've got questions or comments, feel free to join us. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. I understand that in your suit you say Rio Tinto is currently not allowed to run coal plants during the winter, but under this new expansion plan, they do intend to run these new natural gas plants during the winter. What effect do you think this could have on our current pollution levels?
Well, it's their calculation is that it will reduce somewhat or slightly overall annual averages of what they contribute to our average pollution. But during the winter, i.e. now, when our pollution is the worst, if they're allowed to run those natural gas power plants, which they're not allowed to do now, but they're coal plants now, they're not allowed to do that now. If this change of operation is allowed, they will be allowed to run those natural gas plants during the winter. And natural gas plants are cleaner than coal, but they're not clean. That's still fossil fuel combustion. And they're particularly not clean with regard to nitrogen oxide emissions. And nitrogen oxides are precursors of particulate matter pollution. So there's no question that if they're allowed to go through with this expansion plan, as they've outlined, at least during our worst winter inversion months, our pollution will get worse. Not only for that reason, but for the reason that they'll be allowed to expand their mining activity, which is another real source of pollution, including fugitive dust and diesel emissions.
So what kind of outcome do you want from this lawsuit? I mean, are you hoping to bring them back to the bargaining table, which you said you have been negotiating with them for months? Or are you trying to stop the expansion? Or, you know, what's the end goal here?
Oh, well, I think it's very simple. Rio Tinto is, I think, the third largest international mining conglomerate in the world. They're extremely profitable. They have made record profits the last couple of years. In fact, there's a quote from their CEO this August that says they're, hooray, hooray, we're on pace to make record profits, about $15 billion. A substantial portion of that is generated by the Bingham Canyon mine. If they're making $15 billion in profit after taxes, our contention is they can afford to put a small portion of that into some serious pollution mitigation. And they're just not willing to do that. We talked to them ad nauseum about that, and they're just not willing to do it. There are a lot of reasons why corporations won't do it, and I won't speak for them, but our contention is they have the money to do it. They should be doing it. They have a moral obligation to the community to contribute to the solutions of our air pollution problem.
Dr. Brian Mench, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Again, we're talking about air quality. What can be done to curb or to improve the air quality in our valleys here in Utah? 801-355-TALK is our number. I want to turn to the specific health effects that research is showing air pollution has on a person's health. It ranges from heart issues to lung issues to the neurological system. And you note that between 1,000 and 2,000 Utahns die prematurely every year due to our air quality, the pollution levels here. Tell us where that number comes from.
If you want to try and understand from a layperson's standpoint what air pollution does to promote human diseases, the easiest thing to do is think of it as very dilute, community-wide secondhand cigarette smoke, because it's very similar to that. Most of the chemicals are the same. The main one that's missing is nicotine. But you can think, whenever our valley is covered with pollution, that our valley is also is covered with secondhand cigarette smoke, because physiologically it's very similar. So all the disease consequence that we know is related to smoking cigarettes, and including exposure to secondhand cigarette smoke, and even what's now called third-hand cigarette smoke, which I maybe could get into at some later date, all those consequences we know are also consequences of being exposed to air pollution. And in fact, the air pollution that we do experience here along the Wasatch Front is probably comparable in its physiologic consequence to as if we all lived with an active smoker. And that's maybe a one-fifth as if we were smoking a pack a day ourselves. So the diseases are the same. So what are those diseases? Well, actually, the disease that's most easily thought of and the most intuitive for the public is lung disease. But in fact, the organ system that is probably most profoundly affected is the heart and the cardiovascular system. And what air pollution exposure does is it causes a low-grade arterial inflammation that basically slowly constricts the arterial system, and that slowly raises blood pressure. And if it's an acute spike in air pollution, it can raise it fairly quickly. So all the diseases that are consequent to high blood pressure then become manifest in the community at increased rates: heart attacks, strokes, sudden death. The mortality figure that you just mentioned is primarily generated by those kinds of events, heart attacks and strokes. And the formula that we use to make that calculation is a formula that was published last year by the American Heart Association based on hundreds of studies that have accumulated now, giving us this kind of information of how tightly correlated air pollution is with increased mortality rates in the community.
We're speaking with Dr. Brian Mench. He is president and founder of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. There is a public forum at about 2:45 today here at the City Library in the fourth floor conference room about the health consequences of prolonged exposure to air pollution. More information and on our website, kcpw.org. If you'd like to join us this morning, feel free to give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on the program, another yellow air day. How does the inversion affect your activities outside, your driving habits, your health? We're talking about air pollution today, and Dr. Brian Mench is with us. He is president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. He will be hosting a public seminar on the latest medical research linking health issues to air pollution today at about 2:45 here at the City Library in the fourth floor conference room. You can join us now at 801-355-TALK, or that's 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Let's go to the phones, and we'll go to Bip, who is calling from Salt Lake. Bip, your question?
I would like to know why some of the polluters cannot put forth money or money from taxes to erect a large fan that would send this pollution out to the West Desert so that it could dissipate safely.
Okay. I'm not sure that that's in Dr. Mench's bailiwick, but we can give it a try. Solutions to air pollution.
I'm not going to weigh in on that. I'm not an expert on huge, enormous fans.
All right. Well, Bip, it's an interesting idea. Thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. This is from Facebook. Michael Erdman writes, I often wonder about the beauty of this valley 200 or even 100 years ago. I think that's something that we all think about as we look out into the murky skies. 801-355-TALK is our number. Dr. Mench, you sent me pages and pages of citation noting hundreds of studies that have focused on health consequences of dirty air. How many of these studies are specific to Utah?
Some of them are. Those studies are an accumulation of research done by literally thousands of researchers from all over the world, and they include research published in the mainstream medical literature. In fact, some of the flagship journals of the medical community, like the New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet. These are studies that are well-respected. These are studies that, in fact, form the foundation of the EPA's National Ambient Air Quality Standards. It might be worth noting that one of the world's most outstanding air pollution researchers is right here in Utah at BYU, Dr. Arden Pope. And he, perhaps more than any researcher, is responsible for the groundbreaking studies that the EPA used to last revise the National Ambient Air Quality Standards about particulate matter. So some of this research is homegrown, and right here in Utah, we have one of the world's most outstanding, well-respected researchers here at BYU.
One of the studies that you note is the effect that air pollution has on the brain, and how the research shows that some of these tiny particles in the air can actually lodge in parts of the brain. What effect does that have on brain tissue, on cognition, on neurological disorders? What are the connections there?
Well, let me give you an analogy. If you had an automobile and every day you poured a tablespoon of sand down the gas tank, eventually your engine would start showing some trouble. And if, furthermore, you started pouring a little sand in the brakes, a little sand in the chassis, a little sand in the radiator, and every other mechanical component of your car, eventually your car would have some real trouble, even though it's little tiny particles day in and day out. Well, the same sort of thing happens with your organ system, and in this case, the brain. The brain is uniquely vulnerable for a couple of reasons. The arterial inflammation that we talked about a few minutes ago that affects virtually every single organ in your body is of particular concern to the brain, because those organs that have the highest metabolic demand and yet their blood supply is somewhat marginal are the organs that are most affected by this phenomenon. And that includes the brain, the heart, and the lungs, and in the case of a pregnant woman, the placenta. So back to the brain for a minute. So the brain has this vulnerability to this vascular inflammation problem that all the other organs do. But in addition to that, it has a higher metabolic demand than a lot of the other organs do. And then it has a second avenue of exposure, and that is you can actually have pollution exposure. Pollution particles migrating back to your brainstem by virtue of the fact that you can get them lodged in your nose. And they migrate along the nerves of your nose and then slowly back to the brainstem, totally bypassing the lungs. So the brain gets exposure the way all the other organs do, via the lungs, then the blood system, and then delivered to the tissues. But it has this second pathway that makes the brain particularly vulnerable to this inflammatory process. And what we now know is that what this does is it causes abnormal architecture in the brain. It causes the development of the same kinds of protein or protein deposition that we see in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And in fact, researchers have found microscopically and by MRI scans the same sort of early neurodegenerative changes in brain tissue that we find with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, even in children, even in young adults, if they're exposed to more air pollution. Hmm. And then there are epidemiologic studies that support this concern, in that it demonstrates that children who grow up with more air pollution actually show lower intelligence than children who grow up with less air pollution, even if you control for all the other obvious socioeconomic type factors.
Hmm. You mentioned that air pollution poses particular risks for children, and this is true even before they're born. What do the studies show when it comes to the effects of dirty air on pregnant women and developing embryos?
Studies in animals demonstrate that when animals are exposed to more air pollution, at levels that are typical of the Wasatch Front and typical of a lot of urban areas, those animals demonstrate under microscopic section of their placenta changes in the morphology of the placenta.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is
someone like me.
The blood interface between the mother and the fetus is changed. What happens is the blood vessels constrict. We mentioned a few minutes ago about the arterial inflammation that affects the entire body.
Sure.
The blood vessels on the mother's side start to constrict. The blood vessels on the fetal side start to expand in an attempt to compensate for that, but they can't. So basically, it's a slight and subtle starvation of the fetus of the oxygen and nutrients that are necessary for the fetus to grow and develop normally. So those individuals that, as human embryos, were exposed to more air pollution. We know that they have a whole variety of chronic diseases at increased rates compared to people who grew up with less air pollution. In fact, you can take it one step further. Because we know that people who are exposed to air pollution, men who are exposed to more air pollution, will show increased fragmentation of their DNA in their sperm. We know that, in fact, you can be influenced by the air pollution that your grandparents were breathing a couple of generations ago, because it can have an effect that lasts on the chromosomes. You can have this particulate matter actually penetrate the cells, get into the nucleus of the cells, and start to chemically disrupt the function of the chromosomes. And those changes can be passed on to subsequent generations. We know, for instance, that mothers who breathe more air pollution during a pregnancy, even if the child after birth is not exposed to more air pollution, that child will have increased rates of asthma and decreased lung function just because of what the mother breathed years ago.
We're speaking with Dr. Brian Mensch. He is president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. That group will be hosting a public seminar on the latest medical research linking disease to air pollution today at about 2:45 here in the City Library in the fourth floor conference room. At 2 o'clock, his group and Utah Moms for Clean Air will be announcing a lawsuit against Rio Tinto Kennecott Utah Copper for alleged violations of the Clean Air Act. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. And let's go back to the phones, and Steve is with us from Salt Lake. Steve, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
The question I had is whether or not the groups that you just mentioned are contemplating or would contemplate more a direct kind of action in terms of protests at Rio Tinto. I'm a citizen here. I've lived here for 25 years, and I'm contemplating having to leave during the winter for health reasons. And I have a lot of conservative friends who actually say the same kinds of things, but then they sort of throw up their hands and think about the more conservative legislature and the fact that the Republican Party that controls the state is pretty much committed to, you know, we don't want to challenge Rio Tinto because of the jobs. At any rate, I'm wondering whether or not Dr. Mensch and his group are interested in more direct kinds of action, in some senses to embarrass Rio Tinto, not through public information, but just directly demonstrating that people across the spectrum are kind of tired of having their health challenged by Rio Tinto,
Steve,
despite their employment.
Steve, before I let you go, is that something that you would support?
That I personally would support? Absolutely.
Okay. Steve, thanks very much for the call. Dr. Mensch, in addition to lawsuits, are you considering other types of action toward Rio Tinto?
Cleaning up our air pollution is a moral imperative, and we're interested in whatever works. I mentioned earlier in the program that we had spent a number of months trying to negotiate in good faith with Rio Tinto to convince them that they had a moral obligation to reduce their air pollution, and they had the money to do it. And the fact that we weren't successful is the impetus for this lawsuit. So we are very interested in having citizens like the caller and any other citizens who are concerned about this issue to do whatever they can to put public pressure on this multinational corporation to behave better. There's no reason at all why Utah citizens should continue to put up with this circumstance when this multinational mining conglomerate is making these enormous profits and they have the money to mitigate their pollution and they just won't spend it. So we're interested in anything that works. We're interested in pressure on the governor. We're interested in pressure on legislators. We're interested in public action. We're obviously interested in lawsuits because we felt like that's where we were compelled to go next. Anything that works, we think is helpful and important and worth it. And quite frankly, it's going to take all of those avenues to really start making a difference.
Steve, thanks very much for the call. Dr. Mensch, before our time is up, I mean, a lot of this information is quite sobering It's a lot of doom and gloom. Do you see silver lining, or do you see light at the end of the tunnel, whatever metaphor you want to use, in terms of improving our air quality?
Whenever I'm about to go out and speak to the public, my wife needles me with something like, oh, are you going to go tell them we're all going to die again? And yes, this is not a happy message. The medical research is very disconcerting. It's disconcerting because of the overwhelming information about the association between chronic diseases of all types and air pollution. That's very uncomfortable for people to hear. Unfortunately, it's also uncomfortable on a couple of other levels, one of which is it's disconcerting because of the implications it has for our lifestyle, for the conveniences of modern civilization. You know, we've been living for 160 years as part of a joyride on the back of fossil fuels. They've been an integral part of the modern conveniences that we all enjoy, and yet now the medical research is very clear that we're paying a very heavy price for that. So it's disconcerting from the standpoint of health. It's disconcerting from the standpoint of the implications for our lifestyle. Furthermore, it's disconcerting about the implications for our value system. For example, if we hear this kind of information and yet we're still not willing to get out of our SUVs, if we're still not willing to ride mass transit, if we're not willing to accept any inconveniences at all, even though we've now been told by medical experts that it is harming our own health and that of our family, then it has real implications for our value system. So this entire message at every level is an uncomfortable message. But I think the silver lining of this message is we do have a moral imperative to act. We know we should be doing the kinds of things that everybody talks about from the standpoint of global warming, from the standpoint of limited fossil fuel reserves, and so forth. This gives us just another reason to start making that transformation, because it is literally cutting our lives short. We are harming our children. We are even harming our future grandchildren.
Dr. Brian Mensch, an anesthesiologist, founder and president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. That group will host a public seminar today at about 2:45 in the City Library's fourth floor conference room about the latest medical research linking chronic diseases to air pollution. And at 2 o'clock today, his group, along with Utah Moms for Clean Air, will be announcing a lawsuit against Rio Tinto Kennecott Utah Copper for alleged violations of the Clean Air Act. More information on our website, kcpw.org. Dr. Mensch, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, no more cell phone calls behind the wheel. Well, we'll hear about the science behind a new recommendation by the National Transportation Safety Board. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.